if an attack happens that intelligence didn't predict, we weren't out of the ball game. That didn't mean that, you know. We kind of judged the severity of the attack and how bad it was by the different bureaus. The bureaus were laid out in a sequence. If intelligence failed and an attack occurred, and intelligence wasn't handling it, then it went over to PR. Then we tried to PR our way out of the attack. If PR failed, then the next thing it would go over to, the next bureau, was the legal bureau, and you'd try to sue your way out of the attack. And if that failed, the last bureau was finance, and you buy your way out of the attack. The datum is that intelligence is supposed to predict and handle all attacks. Even if it wasn't predicted, intelligence was supposed to handle it. No other bureau was supposed to be doing a damn thing, okay, if intelligence is doing its job. They should all be sitting around with your feet on their desk with nothing to do, okay? Intelligence is supposed to handle it all by itself. When intelligence was having difficulty with a particular attacker and they weren't getting the person handled, then other bureaus would enter the picture and they try to PR their way out of it, sue their way out of it, or buy their way out of it. But that was all considered to be an intelligence failure. Intelligence also had internal security to deal with. Part of our training was a book called Spying as Masters. This book taught you how to be a case officer. That's the master part of the title. The spy and his master. The case officer is the master of the spy. The technique used would be to determine the spy's motivation. Money was considered to be the lowest motivation. You don't want to recruit spies who are money motivated, because they will turn on you in a second. If the other side offers them another $10 more, they're on their side. So you try to avoid. You would have to determine what is this person's motivation in being a spy for us. Try to avoid people who are doing it for money. Try to avoid people. The next one up was people who were maybe ambitious. You know, they had some ambition to get promoted within the organization. Something like that was why they were doing it for you. Try to avoid those as well. I think the next one up was people who had some political reason for doing it. You know, in our case, we weren't into politics, but what that meant to me was like they had some kind of allegiance to the organization. They agreed with what you were doing, that kind of a thing. The top motivation was duty. The person was doing it out of a sense of responsibility. And those are the kind of spies we tried to recruit, because they were the safest, most unlikely to turn, that kind of a thing. When I say spy, I'm talking about somebody who lives their cover. I'm not talking about somebody who does a 10-minute, well, we call them suitable guises. There's other words for them, like pretexts, interviews, that kind of a thing. A pretext interview or a suitable guise would be something that was a short-lived, you know, a throwaway type cover for a temporary situation. I can hardly think of one. Let's say I just wanted to know your telephone number, okay? And so I call up. I don't know your telephone number, or maybe I can't find you. I don't know where you live, but I know where your mother lives, okay? So I call up your mother and say, I'm your friend, and I'm looking for you. Can you tell me your phone number? And I get it, okay? That's a suitable guise or a pretext interview, okay? That's a throwaway thing, you know, you just use it once, it's there for a few minutes, and it's gone, you know. You got the information you wanted. Those were commonly used, but I'm not talking, when I say spy, I don't mean that. I mean somebody who is just like in the normal intelligence community, the governments, they're kind of spies that they use on each other. These, you know, those people live their cover. They have false identities in a lot of cases, and we did know how to make false identities for people. You basically go out and you look for an infant death in the newspaper around the age period of the person who's going to be the spy, okay? an infant death, you know, there's a birth certificate on record there, but there's nobody who ever lived that life. So you get their birth certificate, and you go out and you get yourself a driver's license, a social security card, and every other kind of ID you want, and assume that person's name.
How do you get the birth certificate?
Well, back then, you know, I think laws have changed a little bit. Back then, I mean, you just walk in, it's public record, you know. I want a copy of it. They didn't ask any questions. Hmm. You know, give you a copy of it, and down you go to the DMV with it. This is me, give me a driver's license and do the whole bit, right? You build a whole false identity. And there you go. So that's how that was done. That would be a deep cover type of spy. Now this person is, when I say they're living this false identity, that's what I mean. They're going by this false name, they have false, you know, everything's false. One of the nice things about that is this person could do any kind of thing you ever heard of and never get blamed for it as his real identity. You know what I'm saying? You just wouldn't track back to him. We didn't do a lot of that. Mostly people would use their own real names, but they were still deep cover spies because they were living their cover every day. In a lot of cases, they had false names without going through the process of actually, you know, building a total false identity for them. They would just say that we'd send them in to infiltrate the anti-cult movement, for instance, which is something I specifically did. What I did was I took a Scientologist. We wanted to infiltrate the anti-cult movement. I expelled this Scientologist, so on paper it looked like they were expelled. You know, we wrote out the ethics orders, the whole bit, false comment, everything like that. And then this person was kicked out of the church. In everybody's mind in the church, this person was expelled Scientologist. The only people who knew that they weren't was, you know, the guys in the Intelligence Bureau. And that's a deep cover spy. So this person would go out, and they were using their actual name, but their cover was that they were no longer in Scientology, no longer agreed with it, agreed with the anti-cult people, you know, and wanted to do, you know, they were mad at Scientology, they wanted to help the anti-cult movement expose it, and stuff like that. And then, so of course, they were opened with welcome arms by the anti-cult people, and now here we go, and now there's my deep cover spy in the anti-cult movement. So predict, predict, predict. Oh, they're going to deprogram so-and-so tomorrow. Oh, I see. See what I mean? This group right here is a target for getting a spy in, and they ain't going to sleep at night until they do it.
That's true.
Okay.
Hope it's not you.
Well, I'll tell you something about that that'll help you find out who it might be. Because intelligence is also charged with finding spies in the organization. Now, that person I'm talking about that I sent in on the anti-cult movement, there was a limit to what I would let that person do. Okay? You know, they could criticize, they could help, they could complain, they could natter all they wanted to about Scientology. I really didn't care. But I would not let them go in the newspaper and say it. Mm. I would not let them testify in a court case against Scientology. Mm-hmm. That's going too damn far. You're causing more destruction than you're worth, okay? You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. You can test the person.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm telling you.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm doing right here, no way, Jose. You ain't making no tape like that. You know what I'm saying? The case officer is going to put us, you know, no. You ain't doing that. Okay. So, that's one way to tell.
Yeah.